It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The High Court ruling on the travel ban, written per curiam, meaning as a whole, with no breakdown on how the justices voted, is a stinging blow to lower court rulings. The 90-day ban on travel from Syria, Sudan, Yemen, Iran, Libya, and Somalia will now temporarily go into effect while the court agrees to hear the broader legal issues surrounding the ban in its next term in October.
A huge victory for the White House. Yes, indeed. There's no other way of looking at this. This case will now be argued again on the merits fully the first week of October. You get a decision sometime in maybe December or January, but I expect whatever they say will closely model what they said here.
The ruling exempts those foreign nationals who are college students, workers recruited by U.S. firms, or those who have blood relatives here. The administration has said it will take effect in 72 hours, time to avoid the chaos associated with the original ban that left many travelers stranded. The High Court's decision was greeted with stark partisanship. Senate Judiciary Chairman Charles Grassley wrote, it, quote, reaffirms Congress and the President's constitutional authorities over our nation's lawful immigration system. While House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said, quote, the blatant discrimination of the Muslim and refugee ban is both unjust and dangerous, handing terrorists a powerful recruiting tool. Also today, a big victory for religious liberty in Trinity Lutheran Church versus the Missouri Department of Natural Resources. The church applied for a state grant to resurface its gravel playground surface with a rubberized surface. Missouri denied the church's request on the grounds that it was a religious institution. But the court sided with the church, noting, quote, the consequence is, in all likelihood, a few extra scraped knees. But the exclusion of Trinity Lutheran from a public benefit for which it is otherwise qualified, solely because it is a church, is odious to our Constitution all the same and cannot stand. On the issue of gay rights, the justices struck down an Arkansas law that blocked the use of same-sex parents' names on a birth certificate. But in a separate decision, the court agreed to decide this fall whether a Colorado baker has a right to refuse to bake a cake for a same-sex couple, a violation, he says, of his Christian beliefs.
All right, that was Doug McElway of Fox News, and this is Sandy Rios. And yes, the court did a lot of decision-making yesterday, announced a lot of things they're going to be talking about. Some decisions, a sort of a halfway decision on the travel ban, the stay on the ban, the temporary halt, not a ban at all. And so it was a partial victory for the president, no question about it. We're going to talk about these things at 8:20, 9:20, 7:20, whatever your time zone is. 8:20 Eastern Standard, because Hans von Spakovsky will join me, and we're going to talk about all of that. But I want to comment on one of those cases before Hans joins me, and that's the one about Masterpiece Bakers. That's the guy in Colorado. And I went back in time. The Daily Caller actually had a detailed story about his case in 2015. I want to share a little bit of that with you, and that will help you understand why the decision to hear this case is so important. The guy's name is Jack Phillips. And I'm going to read from the Daily Caller. He's been living his passion of baking cakes for more than 40 years and has owned his own bakery. He calls it Masterpiece Cake Shop for more than 20 years. He has a little video that actually I posted on Twitter this morning. I should tell you guys that I have a Twitter account. It's at Sandy Rios Tweet. For those of you that are into Twitter, it's actually a great way of communicating. And I post things on there all the time that are maybe not in other places in my capacity as a host of your show. But Jack Phillips has been baking these cakes for more than 20 years. He does not bake cakes for Halloween. He does not bake cakes for bachelor parties. And he doesn't open on Sundays because he is a committed Christian. There are Bible studies in Masterpiece Cake Shop. And so you can imagine why then Charlie Craig and David Mullins targeted him for this lawsuit. They came and asked him to do a cake for their same-sex wedding celebration. By the way, he serves gay clients, homosexual clients all the time. That's not the point. It's what they wanted the cake to do, what they wanted it to say. That's the problem. And he told them that he couldn't do it, citing his religious conviction, according to the Daily Caller. Craig and Mullins filed a complaint. They teamed up with the ACLU, and they took Phillips to court. And the Colorado Civil Rights Commission ruled in 2014 that Phillips must bake cakes for same-sex ceremonies or face legal consequences. And on top of that, Greg Phillips and his staff, Jack Phillips and his staff, must take re-education classes and file quarterly compliance reports for 2 years. And one of the gay partners said, "We're just thrilled by that." That's what he told the Associated Press. So Phillips, while he was waiting the appeal, stopped baking cakes altogether. That's been a long time. It's been 2 years. He stopped baking cakes altogether out of fear he'd be targeted. And so now it's his case that came before the court, and that's the case that the court has decided to hear. We'll talk more about that with Hans when he joins us in a minute. Michael Manuel brings us an update on the health care bill. It's cut two. Let's listen.
The Congressional Budget Office projects that over the next 10 years, 22 million people would lose coverage compared to the 23 million that would lose coverage in the House passed bill. It also projects that deficits would be cut by $321 billion. That is more than $200 billion better than the House passed bill. And the CBO says that after premiums go up next year, by 2020, premiums would be cut 30% compared to Obamacare. This is Republican leaders make the push to pass health care reform.
Those five are going to be responsible for socialized medicine if that's what happens, because they're the reason, they'll be the reason that we haven't been able to stop it. On the other hand, do they have some good points? Yes. There are people that we ought to listen to.
The Senate Finance Chairman turned up the pressure on his colleagues Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Ron Johnson, Rand Paul, and Dean Heller, who say they oppose the GOP health care package in its current form. GOP leadership unveiled some adjustments to the bill today, including a lockout provision to make sure people buy insurance before they get sick. It says there would be a six-month waiting period for people who have let their insurance coverage lapse for more than 2 months. Also today, President Trump weighed in on Twitter. The Democrats have become nothing but obstructionists. They have no policies or ideas. All they do is delay and complain. They own Obamacare. And the president suggested the Senate doesn't have to act now. Republican senators are working very hard to get there with no help from the Democrats. Not easy. Perhaps just let OCARE crash and burn.
All right, that's Mike Emanuel. Lots in that report, actually. I wish we had the little clip that we played yesterday of Nancy Pelosi and, Elizabeth Warren. People are going to die. Tens of thousands of people are going to die. Now we have Orrin Hatch on that clip saying that those five, meaning Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Ron Johnson and Rand Paul and the fourth who is objecting. Oh, this is it Cassidy who's objecting because, you know, no. I've forgotten which senator it is, but he's objecting not because it's too liberal, but because he doesn't want to cut anything from the Medicare coverage. And so I'm just saying that's what they're saying, that thousands are going to die, tens of thousands. And why don't you play that, Rob? Let's listen.
The Senate Republican health care bill is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
He said that he hopes the Senate bill will have heart. So sad, Mr. President. Heartless. Mean and heartless.
These cuts are blood money. People will die.
All right. So, and Nancy Pelosi went on to say hundreds of thousands of people will die if this passes. Okay. So that's pretty appalling. Does anyone believe that? People are dying right now because people do die, actually. They get sick and they die. And there is no pill you can take to stop that. But I would say that when you don't have good, when you can't see a doctor and get proper care, you are at risk for your health. Obamacare doesn't fix that. You have a piece of paper that says you have insurance, but when doctors are leaving in droves or when the deductible is so high you might as well not have insurance, you're not covered. So this is just posturing. And so Orrin Hatch now, a Republican, has joined in with this kind of ridiculousness, saying that these five Republicans that are holding out because this is a bad bill are going to cause us to go to socialized medicine. We are already in the midst of socialized medicine with Obamacare. And it is true that the failures are going to, that's what the left wants. They wanted Obamacare to fail so that the people would clamor and be so upset and frustrated and uncovered and overbilled that they would clamor for the government to take over and provide their health care. Warren Buffett weighed in on this just yesterday, and he says a single payer is probably the best system. And he says America can afford it. We can afford to pay for all Americans to have government health care. But, of course, that's ridiculous. Warren Buffett may be a rich man. Well, maybe he should pay for it. He's got $73.3 billion. Perhaps Warren Buffett should pay for it. But for the regular people who function every day and try to provide health care for their kids, this is no laughing matter. And when the costs keep increasing so that they can't even be, no matter what they're paying, what they need is not covered, it creates so much angst. And that's kind of where we are. And I know the CBO came out with their score, but you have to understand the CBO is a very liberal, manipulated organization. You can't really trust their numbers. The point is that if Obamacare mandates are lifted, which the new plan would do, people are not going to sign up for insurance. They're claiming millions of people will not be insured, but that's because they don't want to be insured. They will choose not to. They don't have to pay fines anymore. They don't have to buy insurance. So I guess that is a good thing. But I want to play something that may seem irrelevant to you, but it isn't. And this has to do with my home state of Illinois. And I just want you to know that Illinois has been spending money hand over fist trying to pay for everything for everybody. Their pensions are off the chart. Retired college professors are making as much as $300,000 for their pensions. So guess what? Illinois is in what is described by Ted Dabrowski, who was with the Illinois Policy Institute, a death spiral. And I want you to hear this report that was on Fox last night that spells it out. Let's listen.
Perhaps you can look over my right shoulder and see the state of affairs in Illinois right now. Decades of taking in not enough money to cover all of the money that was going out. Failure to contribute to municipal pension funds. So here is where the state stands as we speak. $15 billion nearly in unpaid bills without a budget over the course of the past 2 years. As a result of that, about $800 million burned up in fees and interest on those unpaid bills. And when it comes to pensions, $251 billion, that's a quarter of $1 trillion in unfunded pension liability. What's the answer to this? Well, most people say not only cut spending, but also raise taxes.
All right, I'm going to interrupt. Right, we don't need to hear all that. They go in and analyze the income tax. But the point is, Illinois has made such terrible decisions. The left-leaning, off-the-charts legislature has refused to even come up with a budget. So they just keep spending money. So what's going to happen? The policemen, the firemen, the teachers, the college professors of Illinois, they're not going to have their pensions. Illinois is going to go bankrupt. I've seen article after article each day of how bad things are getting. They are at the very end of the, in terms of bond rating, they're the 50th state in the union. And they will go under, and it will have consequences. And I say that and emphasize that because this whole thing of taking on a new entitlement, of paying health care for everyone, when we are $20 trillion in debt, will lead us to the same cliff. And there'll be nobody to bail the United States of America out. And so all of this talk about health care and trying to increase the spending, it's just a game, and it's a dangerous game that will have no good end. It's time for us to sort of come to grips with the deep, terrible hole that our leaders have put us in. And while we were not paying attention because we didn't take the time to be responsible citizens, we allowed people who have no responsibility to gain power, money for themselves, and to put our country in this kind of a financial bind. So I have to say, I am not for this bill. I'm not for any kind of health care bill. I'm not. I think it should be the free market. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
Hey, I'm Hannah Kerr. Freedom from addiction is possible, and it starts when we help the people around us who are struggling. It starts with me and with you.
Heroin led me to 12 overdoses, 3 comas, and there was an intervention where my 3-year-old nephew was just begging me not to leave again. 10 days later, I walked through the doors of Teen Challenge. The relationship that I have with God changed me. My dad likes to tell me that he's just really glad to have his little girl back, and I just praise God every day that the old things have gone and the new things have come.
Stories like this happen every day, and you have a part to play. If you know a teen or an adult stuck in addiction, Teen Challenge can help. 1-855-END-ADDICTION or teenchallengeusa.com. Freedom from addiction starts here. You're listening to American Family Radio.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
It was a good day for American sovereignty at the Supreme Court. Justices gave President Trump a partial victory on his proposed travel ban. That ban would have put limits on people coming to America from 6 nations that are infested with radical Islam. The court reinstated much of the policy and agreed to hear full arguments as early as this fall. President Trump issued a triumphant tweet saying the court issued a clear victory for our national security. He went on to say he cannot allow people into the United States who would want to do us harm. The justices wrote that when it comes to refugees who have no ties to anyone or anything across the fruited plain, well, the balance tips in favor of the government's compelling need to provide for the nation's security. In other words, the Supreme Court rightly determined we have no constitutional obligation to let folks into the country who want to blow us up. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
It's hardly a clear victory. And in fact, everything that the president talks about, everything is great, wonderful. It's still a Muslim ban. And by lifting a part of the injunction, by creating a category of people who will be able to come in, by showing some kind of bona fide relationship with people or institutions in our country, I don't know what that means. And by the way, you know, Neil Gorsuch, who I did not support as a Supreme Court justice, he's joined two of the most conservative justices, Clarence Thomas and Alito, on the court to take the position that the entire injunction should have been lifted. This is like the three horsemen of the apocalypse, and they're waiting for the fourth one to come along so that they can go on their trend toward what I call extremism. And that's exactly, you know, I'm not surprised at all that Neil Gorsuch is right in there with Thomas and Alito and wanting to pretty much tell the president, you just go right ahead, impose a Muslim ban. I'm glad that the other justices are not there quite yet.
All right. So that was, who knew? That was Senator Mazie Hirono. I think that's the first time I've heard her speak. She's a senator, by the way, a Democrat from Hawaii. I guess the only encouraging thing about that clip is that she did know, at least, who the four horsemen of the apocalypse were. That's probably a good sign. We hope they do know something, these senators that serve us. Well, the Supreme Court made some really momentous decisions yesterday. You've been hearing about it for the last 24 hours, but there are some things about it that we probably need to flesh out, and I can't think of anyone to explain it to us any better than Hans von Spakovsky. He's a senior legal fellow at Heritage, and he joins us this morning. Morning, Hans.
Good morning, Sandy. And don't you hope that's the last time you hear that Senator?
Yes, as a matter of fact, now you ask me, I do. Yes, that was kind of wasted airtime. But Hans, of all the decisions made yesterday, and there were some really significant things, whether they're announcing they're going to hear something or the decisions actually made, what do you think the most significant decision announced yesterday was?
Well, I actually, it's hard to pick one. I think the two most important were the Trinity Lutheran case and also the case of on the, what everybody's calling the travel ban, even though it's not really a travel ban. They're both very important, and frankly, both of them illustrate who the good justices are on the court and who the worst justices are on the court in terms of not wanting to recognize basic constitutional rights.
All right, well, let's take one at a time. Let's do the travel ban. Yes. Sure. I don't know why we keep saying that. They keep printing it, but it's really just not true. It's a halt. It's a temporary 90-day halt. It's practically nothing when you think about the national security, but they've made so much of it. And so all right, you said it tells us something about the justices. Give us some insight, because there's been some dispute. I guess they did not sign their names or they didn't indicate who said what. So how do we know how the justices came down on the travel decision?
Because it was a per curiam decision, which means that all nine justices agreed with it. Not a single one of them disagreed with lifting the injunction that had been issued that prevented the executive order from being enforced. And the fact that even the liberal justices agreed the injunction should be lifted, that tells you just how far out of line the lower court decisions were. In essence, what they said was the travel ban can go in place, and again, 90-day suspension of entry from only six countries, all terrorist safe havens, that can go into force for any foreigners who don't have any relationship with someone in the U.S., which makes perfect, absolute sense. Now, they did say, we're going to leave the injunction in place for individuals who have what they call a credible, bona fide relationship with a person or entity in the United States. So, for example, someone in Somalia, which is one of the, he can apply for a visa. The injunction doesn't mean that the government has to grant it to him. All it means is that he can apply for a visa, but otherwise the State Department and Homeland Security can apply all their usual rules. And this isn't really much of a loss for the administration anyway. Why? Well, because when they put out the executive order had a waiver process already in it so that individuals could, in fact, apply and say, we need to waive the 90-day rule on me, and here's why. So this really isn't, even the part of the injunction that's in place isn't going to really change what the administration's already been doing. That's why this was a very big victory. The only dissent in the case was the three conservative justices, and that was Gorsuch, Alito, and Thomas, saying, we think the entire injunction should be lifted.
This order also covered refugee resettlement, didn't it? It had some element of that.
Yes.
You know, Hans, your phone is cutting out a little bit. I don't know if there's anything you can do, but I'm just mentioning.
Sorry about that. It all 100 suspension of refugees coming in and capped the number of refugees who could come in annually at 50,000. The court applied exactly the same rule. They said the rule is fine for foreigners who have no relationship to anyone in the U.S., but the rule can't be applied to people, refugees, who have a relationship with somebody in the U.S. So in essence, they left almost all of it intact again, even with regard to refugees.
Well, I think that's good news, isn't it? I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about the number of refugees coming in, even under Trump, and a lot of concern about that. So it's confusing, Hans. There are so many parts of it, and we need someone like you to kind of explain this to us. And so bottom line on the refugees, this means that the recent pieces I've been reading about this are tremendous concerns that there have been even more refugees admitted into the country in the last few months. So this will stop that, correct?
That is correct. The executive order is now in place.
Okay. All right. So do you have any, now there's been some discussion about the timing on this because the 90 days will be up something like right before the court now actually hears the I may have the words wrong, I'm not an attorney, the merits of the case, actually adjudicates, actually goes into the arguments used by the lower courts. That's going to be October. So I don't quite understand the timing on that and how effective, I guess we've just bought some time here, right?
Well, yeah, we have. In essence, what the court said is, look, we're going to take up the case, we're going to hear arguments in October on the merits of the case, but in the meantime, the lower courts didn't have the right to issue an injunction to the president from enforcing this order. So until we hear about the case in October, the government has the ability to enforce this executive order to the extent that we just...
So, Hans, the president could say when this 90-day suspension of travel ends its jurisdiction, he could actually issue another one then, pretty much, couldn't he? And say, well, we want to wait till the court actually hears the whole thing.
Yes, he certainly could. But I would assume that by October, they will know whether or not. Because remember, the whole purpose of the suspension, temporary suspension, was to make sure that the Department of Homeland Security and our intelligence services had the vetting procedures in place needed to thoroughly screen the people trying to get into the country. And I would assume that by October, they're going to know whether they've got those procedures now in place.
All right. Well, let's talk then about Trinity Lutheran, because you said that's the other most important thing you think was decided yesterday. That's that private Christian school in Missouri that wanted to use, like, refurbished tire material on their playground, and they were refused funding because they were a Christian school. So what's the significance of the finding in their favor?
Well, the significance of it, and we should mention, it was a 7-2 decision with Justice Kagan and Breyer, two of the liberal justices, joining the majority. What they in essence said was that a public benefit cannot be denied to a church just because it is a church. And while this simply has to do with grants from the state to improve the safety of playgrounds, this is really important, because if they'd gone the other way, then it would mean that if a local town or city said, we're not going to provide police services or fire to a church because you are a religious entity, they'd be able to do that, which is absolutely bizarre and crazy that anyone would think the First Amendment would require that. But, of course, we have crazy justices in the Supreme Court who believe that because they dissented. And that's Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Sotomayor.
Yeah, what were their reasons? Do you know? Ginsburg and Sotomayor said it was okay to withhold funding from a Christian school because they were Christian. What purpose or what reason did they give for that?
Well, they used the old tons of phrase of, oh, well, this means there's no longer any separation between church and state, and therefore it means that the government is subsidizing a church. You know, that's a ridiculous claim. All the court is saying is, no, we're not subsidizing a church. It's simply saying that the church school is entitled to the very same kinds of benefits that are given to all other public and private schools. And that was the essence of the grant. Any public or private school in the state could apply to get their playground rubberized, to get a grant to make it safe for the kids. Why in the world should a church school somehow not be able to do that? And seven justices agreed. These two justices, with their bizarre view of the First Amendment, said the church should be denied the benefits.
Hans, we just have a few minutes left, and I've got so many things to ask you. I'm going to jump ahead. We noticed that Anthony Kennedy did not step down. And some of us kind of were warned that that wasn't going to, that's been the buzz for months, you know, since Ted Cruz, I think, was the first person I heard say that, I think when he was running for president, that someone was likely to step down. We think it was Kennedy. What do you think happened with that?
Yeah, I don't know if those were just rumors and he never planned to do it. If he did, I think he may have been persuaded not to do it because of the important cases that were coming up. That includes both the Trump travel ban case and now the other case we haven't mentioned, which was they took a case of a who was fined by the state for refusing to provide cakes for gay marriages because of his religious views. That's a very important case, and he may have felt that he wanted to be there for that one.
Wow, and actually, that's probably not good news because he was one of the most radical votes, and he wrote some of the most radical opinions on gay marriage. I don't think it's comforting to think that Kennedy would stay in place for the decision on that. Now, that Masterpiece Cake Baker, that case, Hans, they said they agreed to hear it, right? No decision has been made.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
That's right. So we won't hear it till the end of the summer when their fall term starts up.
All right. Some people are saying that Gorsuch had knocked it out of the ballpark. He proved to be a solid conservative with his decisions. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Again, remember, on the travel ban, it was Gorsuch, Thomas, and Alito saying the entire injunction ought to be lifted. That was just one sign of how he really seems to be.
I actually heard someone say that Gorsuch showed that he's going to be every bit the great writer, colorful commentator on his decisions that Justice Scalia was. Would you agree with that?
Yes, that's a pretty good prediction because when he was a 10th Circuit judge, yeah, he wrote very, very good opinions, very colorful opinions. So, yeah, I think he's following very closely in the footsteps of Justice Scalia.
All right, 2 minutes left, Hans. So what else did we learn yesterday that you want to mention?
Well, like I said, the I just mentioned, which is really just how far out and how radical Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Justice Sonia Sotomayor are. I just had a tough time reading the dissent in the Trinity Lutheran case, because their view of religious freedom in this country is so limited. They in essence, believe that, you should be able to practice your religion at your church, perhaps in your home, but you dare not bring it out into the public square anywhere else and live your life according to those principles when you are out in your community. But that in essence, is their view.
You know, I guess my surprise with that is that Elena Kagan didn't join them. I'm surprised she wasn't part of their decision on that. Did that surprise you?
No, I actually heard the oral arguments in that Trinity Lutheran case, and it was pretty clear to me at the time, and a lot of people too, that they thought Kagan and Justice Breyer joined the majority. You know, Justice Breyer, for example, who's a very liberal judge, he's the one that actually brought up at the oral that they ruled in favor of the state of Missouri, then it would mean that fire services and police services could also be withheld by government authorities from churches. So when he asked that question, it was pretty clear that he saw the implications of a decision going the wrong way in this case.
Well, I guess overall, we would just have to say, Hans, there's a lot to be encouraged about. We are seeing a bit of a shift. Whether it lasts or not, I guess, because of what you've just said about Kennedy staying on in regard to this Masterpiece Cake decision makes me a little nervous. But I do think that things are moving in the right direction. Certainly, we've lost so much ground in the courts that any good news is good news right now. So, Hans, I assume you're going to be writing about this. Oh, gosh, we can't hear you. Hans, we can't hear you. I'm so sorry. I'm going to let you go. But whatever you post about it, we're going to post on our Facebook page. Hans von Spakovsky of Heritage Foundation, one of our favorite legal experts. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. In the burning bush encounter, Scripture records that it began as Moses kept Jethro's flock. When the Lord saw that Moses turned aside to see, he called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses, and he said, here I am. Notice God didn't speak to Moses until he gave full attention to what God was trying to show him. Diligent attention to daily duty is necessary. We must be careful, however, not to allow duty to become an idol. Are our hearts still sensitive to God? Can God still get our attention?
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
You would not stop talking about stealing just because you know people who are in your congregation who have stolen.
Janet Mefford.
That's where we get it all twisted in our minds, because we are treating certain sins as different from others. And in God's mind, sin is sin. You're not condemning people simply because you're talking about sin. It's not the sin that will go to hell, right? It's going to be the person who goes to hell apart from Christ. Join me for Janet Mefford Live, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. There's good news and bad news in the Supreme Court ruling yesterday concerning President Trump's latest executive order imposing a pause on most immigrants from six failed and/or hostile nations. The good news is that the president's right to restrict such immigration has been affirmed, at least implicitly, repudiating lower courts' insistence that this particular president lacked such authority. The bad news is that the Supremes have created a new class of potentially dangerous foreign nationals who, on the basis of a claimed special relationship to American citizens, will be entitled to litigate their entry into the United States. What matters most now is whether, after all the thrashing over pausing immigration until a system is instituted for vetting and keeping out potential jihadists, President Trump will adopt Sharia supremacism as the only sensible basis for such screening. He can, and he must. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Senator Bernie Sanders refused multiple times to answer questions from Fox News Senate producer Kara Rowland about the FBI investigation that has reportedly come to focus on Sanders' wife, Jane.
Where are you from?
Fox News. CBS is reporting on this. Politico is reporting on this. Do you still believe it's politically motivated, sir?
Well, I'm glad that you're interested in the fact that the Republican leadership is proposing legislation which would throw millions of people off of health insurance.
The case centers on Jane Sanders' tenure as president of Vermont's Burlington College from 2004 to 2011 and a loan application she filed in 2010 to help the school expand. Published reports allege Sanders claimed $2.6 million in pledges, but as the college spiraled into bankruptcy, Sanders reportedly raised less than $700,000, leading the Trump campaign chair in Vermont, Brady Tunsing, to ask federal prosecutors and banking regulators to investigate what he termed apparent federal bank fraud.
I have seen public records documents that show that an investigation has been started. Those records were with the Vermont Department of Education, where the U.S. prosecutors were asking the Department of Education to preserve records as part of their investigation.
Senator Sanders' campaign manager, Jeff Weaver, did not respond to Fox News' request for comment, but he told Politico the couple has hired Richard Cassidy, a well-regarded Vermont lawyer and Sanders' superdelegate, and Lawrence Robbins, a Washington attorney whose clients have included Scooter Libby, the chief of staff to Vice President Cheney, who was convicted in the Valerie Plame case. Democratic Party activists discounted the case hurting Senator Sanders politically, at least for now.
He's going to get a big benefit of the doubt, with particularly with his supporters.
Senator Sanders' Senate staff did not respond to multiple requests for comment either. Asked about this case by a local Vermont reporter last month, the senator called it nonsense and noted the involvement of President Trump's former campaign aide, Brady Tunsing.
All right, this makes me ask that question. You think the worm is turning? You know, I actually do. I'm going to give you a series of stories here. By the way, Sandy Rios back with you. It just seems to me that things are shifting, really. The Supreme Court decision yesterday, the whole business, the ridiculousness about Russia, and the flailing about the Democrats, because really there's nothing to that story, and they're running out of things to accuse. It just seems like things are, it's just like truth is catching up. And I'm going to talk to you just a second about the Sanders story, because I'm not sure it's clear even. James is such a great reporter, but here's the story, as best I understand it. Jane O'Meara Sanders, remember, that's the wife that went with Bernie Sanders. I guess that's his only wife, I'm assuming, to their honeymoon in Moscow, when Moscow and Russia was our avowed enemy during the Cold War, their honeymoon in Russia, this couple. So she is the president of this Burlington College, and she files a false, the allegation is that she filed a false report requesting a loan from a big bank, or from a bank, for money, and she falsified the amount of donors that she had by a huge amount. And then the allegation against him is that he allegedly may have used his Senate office to intervene with the bank in order to get that loan, and then the college defaulted. Now, that's my understanding of the allegations here. And so It's a very serious, it's bank fraud, and that's going to be the charge. And so that's what's happening with Sanders. And then on Loretta Lynch, Judge Napolitano on Fox is saying that she may face 5 to 10 years of prison if she is convicted of the felony. What would be the felony? The felony would be, if it's true, as is alleged, that emails exist between Loretta Lynch and former DNC chairman Debbie Wasserman Schultz improperly discussing the Clinton email investigation. In other words, you know, how can we cover this up? How can we handle this? Can we be assured you'll take care of it? These are my words. I'm not reading from an email, just saying. There are allegations that there was collusion between Mrs. Lynch as Attorney General and Debbie Wasserman Schultz to cover for Mrs. Clinton. Remember, we do know at least that Mrs. Lynch, according to former FBI Director Comey, told him to talk about the investigation as a matter, not don't talk about an investigation, just say it's a matter. That's words with attorneys matter, and they matter in terms of my words too, but matter. In other words, take it, back it up. Don't say investigation, just say matter. And so that's for a reason. That's to cover up the seriousness of the charges and the investigation. And so 5 to 10 years maybe for Loretta Lynch. I mean, we're down the pike from that, but they are investigating it, and it looks like there's some serious reasons to believe that those email may exist. Claire McCaskill, does anybody remember? Well, let's see, what did she do here? I want to go back in time before I tell you the current stuff. She's been all over Donald Trump and any of his associates who have met with Russians. She fired off a tweet in March, attacking Attorney General Sessions, saying that Senator Sessions, remember when he was being vetted for the role of Attorney General before the Senate, said that he had not met the Russian ambassador. He didn't recall meeting him. And then we found that there were two meetings, at least, with him. And then Sessions' response to that, well, these were meetings in my capacity as senator. They were group meetings. Like, it was one was in passing, but it wasn't in my capacity as a person working for the Trump campaign. And so Mrs. McCaskill, senator from Missouri, fired off a tweet in March castigating him and saying that members of the Senate Intelligence Committee rarely, if ever, meet with a Russian ambassador. But then it was revealed, and you'll remember this, I think, that McCaskill had already tweeted twice about interacting with that very same Russian ambassador, once in 2013 about a meeting pertaining to U.S. adoptions, and again in 2015 about a phone call with the ambassador about the Iran nuclear deal. Okay, so remember she said, it was Twitter. There were only 140 characters, and I just couldn't quite get it all in. So I guess she'd forgotten that she lied, because now here she is. She said unequivocally, she never once met with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak in her 10 years serving on the Senate Armed Services Committee. No call or meeting with Russian ambassador ever. Ambassadors call members of the Foreign Relations Committee. But soon after that tweet, it was revealed that she did interact with the Russian ambassador. She not only interacted, she went to his home, to a black tie reception. She was photographed at the event, honoring her former Democratic boss, Representative James Symington from Missouri. And so then she's asked about that. She acknowledges attending the dinner, but she said she only did so because of her longstanding relationship with Symington. But she had just said she never once met Sergei Kislyak in her 10 years, but she had been at his home for a black tie event. That kind of hard to believe. Hard to believe she might forget something like that. What do you think? So maybe the liars are getting caught in their lies. You think that's possible? And speaking of that, there's CNN, who has now lost three journalists because they wrote an article earlier this week. What day is today? Or I guess it was last week, where they claimed that there was another link between one of Trump's associates and the Russians, and it turned out to be completely bogus. CNN actually apologized, retracted the article. Now three journalists who were working for CNN have gone. Now some are saying resigned, others are saying, I don't know, they're just not there anymore. And these are not kids. These are seasoned reporters. Frank worked for USA Today and Newsday for three decades, and he's the one that cooperated with that fabricated report. And then Lichtbau, let's see, he's a veteran of the New York Times. He won a Pulitzer Prize for national reporting in 2006. He's been with CNN just 3 months. And then Harris was the executive editor of CNN Money. So these are not young, inexperienced journalists. These are seasoned journalists who cooperated on an article that was a fabricated lie. And so now here comes James O'Keefe, who's the famous undercover reporter, went undercover and chatted with John Bonifield, who was a CNN supervising producer. And you have to hear this. Let's listen to the first part.
Why is CNN constantly like Russia this, Russia that?
Because it's ratings.
Because it's ratings?
Our ratings are incredible right now.
Because of...
My boss, I shouldn't say this, my boss a couple days yesterday, we were having a discussion about this dental shoot, and he's like, I just want you to know what we're up against here. And he goes, just to give you some context, President Trump pulled out of the climate accords, and for a day and a half we covered the climate accords, and the CEO of CNN said in our internal meeting, he said, good job everybody covering the climate accords, but we're done with it, let's get back to Russia.
the CEO?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So even the climate accords, it was like, okay, a day or so, but we're moving back to Russia.
That's what's, I understand, it's all ratings, right?
Oh, it's a business. So, it's a business. People are like, the media has like an ethical... But all the nice, cutesy little ethics that used to get talked about in journalism school, you're just like... That's adorable. That's adorable. Yeah, this is a business. Especially cable news. You know, cable news isn't the New York Times, and it's not even like NBC News. I mean, NBC News still gets 20 million viewers a night. Cable news is getting a million. So, like, they gotta do what they gotta do to make their money, I think. And so I love the news business, but I
find it so
fascinating. I'm very cynical about it. At the same time, so are most of my colleagues.
All right, that's John Bonifield, CNN supervising producer. And in case you couldn't quite catch that, he says it's a business. People are like, the media has an ethical, but all this nice, cutesy little ethics that used to get talked about in journalism school, you're just like, that's adorable. This is a business, especially cable news. And then he says, my boss, and his boss is Jeff Zucker. I shouldn't say this, but my boss yesterday, we were having a discussion about this shooting, and he said, he was just like, I want you to know what we're up against here. So he says, I know that, I'm paraphrasing. President Trump pulled out of the climate change. We covered that. But now let's get back to Russia. And so there's a lot more to this clip. And we're going to put this on our Facebook page so you can see the whole thing. Good for James O'Keefe. He admits that Trump is good for business. He also talks about, this producer talks about how there's no proof of the Russia scandal. If there were something, he thought we would have seen it by now, which is what you've heard me say. So even a CNN producer is admitting that. So this is not good for CNN. And I just wanted to share that with you. But now here's another story that I have to get to. This is just probably the most important story of the morning, really. And we'll put this on our Facebook page because I know I'm going to run out of time here. It's put out by Circa News this morning. Did the FBI retaliate against Michael Flynn by launching Russia Probe? And this is a story about how a female agent, her name was Robin Gritz, she had become an absolute femme fatale when it came to international spying our enemies, terrorism. She was just knocking out of the ballpark and climbing up the ladder because she was so shrewd and so good at what she was doing. And then she went to work for, guess who? McCabe, the second in command, who's been in the news so very much lately. And then she started getting terrible ratings. She completely tanked. And she was going to file an EEO complaint against McCabe. McCabe found out about it and then decided to open her personal file and start slandering. Well, these are my words now. This is my my assessment from what Circa has written. And I'm not being careful because I'm trying I'm not giving you the technical terms. But let's just say the allegation is that McCabe went after her with a vengeance when he found out that she was going to file a complaint against him. And guess who intervened? General Michael Flynn. General Michael Flynn knew her work on the battlefield. He knew how valuable she had been. He'd seen her work ethic. He knew how competent she was. And he intervened and wrote a letter. And when McCabe found out about that, he was very upset. The FBI wanted to block. I don't know if they successfully did. Flynn's letter, and they felt that it was completely irrelevant. And then in 2 years after this dust up, and it still may being adjudicated, the girl actually ended up leaving the FBI. After this, the allegation is that McCabe then was involved in this whole thing about revealing Flynn's private conversation and alleging, bringing charges against him, opening an investigation, that it was payback. This is the headline. Did the FBI retaliate against Michael Flynn by launching a Russia probe? Wow. That is a bombshell of the morning. We'll put that on our Facebook page. And that's something you'll want to read and share and get the word out, because we need to reveal all of the dark stuff that's going on. Honesty and truth just seems to overpower it, as the other stories have illustrated earlier. All right, Sandy Rios with you, and I'll be with you back tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.